to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our Central Iowa community. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer, you name him, Mike Murphy, along with Pat Schlerbaum, our good neighbor and Milford Township's resident naturalist. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, will share her heart to heart and tune in Tuesday's messages later this hour.
There's nothing in the world that can compare with a hamburger, juicy and rare. A hamburger lives for the pleasure it gives. It's a thrill on the bill of fare. Such heavenly food deserves the best. A home and contentment beneath my vest. There's nothing in the world that's so divine as a hamburger, tender and fine. I adore you. The hamburger, juicy and rare.
And Pat, we were over on the west side of Ames a couple of days ago, and we noticed this little restaurant tucked off on the side south of Lincoln Way.
Burgers on the Fly.
That's right. What did you think of the setup there? It wasn't open when we got there.
What a complete menu of options that I noticed one key component to his delivery of his products or his different types of hamburgers were the spicy and the bacon. He seemed to have a proclivity of seasoning.
Yeah, I know it's the proprietor is Keith Weinfeld of Burgers on the Fly. Good morning, Keith.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah, we were just kind of highlighting the fact that all three of us have stopped by and been at your establishment, and we were wondering if you could give us a little history of how you got started.
The first time that I met guys, we never really got into a little bit of that. So that's kind of the beautiful part about how this all happened. Back in 2018, I had gotten divorced, and my partner, her and my kids had moved out, and then moved a bunch of friends in. And I was working on the road for 12 years and decided I did not want to do that anymore with my life changing. So Buddy and I sat down and did some talk about, you know, what can we do to create a business. And here came Burgers on the Fly. So May 4th of 2019, we made our first appearance at the Ames Farmers Market Food Truck Competition. And to our surprise, we ended up taking second against all the veterans that's been there for, you know,
eight years,
yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm a little interested in how you came up with the name, because, you know, the old restaurant joke about, hey, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. And he would go, shh, don't tell anybody. Everybody will want it, you know. So how did you decide Burgers on the Fly was the name for you?
It actually was it was going to be called the Wings on the Fly. In the household of my friends, I was the cook. Everybody kind of just ate fast food or something until I had time to sit down and I made food, and so they would wait for me. And so I would do burgers, I would do ribs, I would do wings, and, you know, it was something that they rather enjoyed.
Oh, that's great.
The other second big motivation was towards the latter part of the years of my marriage, you know, I started stepping up into the more intricate parts of, you know, cooking, getting out and grilling just a little more artsy, you know, starting to do the ribs, doing the wings, and, you know, just more than just, you know, burgers and hot dogs and stuff like that. And once I started getting good at it, I was spending countless hours learning about combinations of recipes, combinations of seasonings, proper builds, all that good jazz. You know, I could go on and on. I've given a lot of hours and research into all of this. And you know.
Yeah.
After I started good at it, I had a lot of friends and family coming over to enjoy it, and I thought to myself, I'm on to something.
Yeah.
So that was my second validation that I knew what I was doing.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not no Gordon Ramsay or anything like that, so obviously I didn't bring something to the table that I couldn't do, you know, but I used my strength to the advantage.
Yeah.
And I created a program that could be trained and multiplied and, I don't know, executed by any new employee that we, you know, intend to hire. And you know, yeah. So it's been really quite a journey.
Yeah, Keith, this is Pat Schlarp. So wings on the fly, there's kind of a metaphor happening there. You seem to give a lot of thought to all your activities, every aspect of this business that you've established. So what was it about wings on the fly that created the impression that possibly burgers on the fly was going to be a bit more encompassing? Or what were
I just... that it was going to be a little more intricate to have a process put together. And now we have one. I mean, now we do wings out of our truck, too.
Right, sure.
We do burgers, wings, fries, chicken sandwiches, chicken tenders. But the reason that it took us nearly, you know, we're starting our third year here in May. So the reason it took this long to get to this point to even add wings to the menu was capability with fryers, capability with process. How can I get it, you know, faster? How can I still keep quality?
Yeah.
How can I store it? How can I make sure that the process is simple enough?
Yeah, this
where anybody can keep up with it, you know.
Yeah. Well, for those that listeners that maybe haven't seen your setup, it's not a semi truck. It's, I mean, you've described quite a extensive menu here. It's really somewhat compact. And I guess what would you describe your facility?
It is a camper turned into a food truck.
Yeah.
We had an extra one sitting in the family, and we ended up turning it from...
Oh, great. It was repurposed.
Yeah. It was a repurposed camper turned into a food truck. Because when we started, we had, our black, a smaller trailer that many would remember us as. And it was very limiting on, how far you could take it with your program. And... not very accommodating for more than a couple people inside the unit as well. So we ended up, just sitting down and thinking, how can we do this at a more going next level with it? Has always been my motivation. How do we go next level?
Well, Keith. What I was going to ask you is, you started there at the farmer's market, and now you seem to have a really nice location, a lot of pedestrian and traffic. Are you settling in that area, or are you still maintaining a mobility, especially as the year starts to get a little warmer and folks will be looking for food trucks in areas, different areas?
Well, the whole part of our program, and nothing's out of question, but, you know, since we're limited with staff for 2021, I mean, COVID really changed the game. Last year, we had two locations that we were operating during the day. That would be the big camper unit and our black trailer we had running last year. So we had two daytime locations going, and then we actually had three nighttime locations going at one time. But with COVID, the second bar closed situation, and we just could not hold on to all of our crew. And winter approached, and it was kind of just a double down of just misfortune. But in every storm that I would say we went through as far as COVID last year and then derecho. I'm proud to say that when derecho happened, we were the first food truck up and running and serving the community, you know, and that was such a privilege to be able to be there and do all that. As much as, man, was that chaotic and my back sure. hurting, man, but it was a really cool sight to see the community getting together. It was like a small concert, you know, in the driveway for, man, 10 hours straight. I can only see back there, you know, once every 10 seconds as I was serving, but it was really quite something.
So your hope then is as things progress here that hopefully you can expand back to your other facilities.
Yeah, so our location, that is a location that we rent out there, and we are very grateful. Very, very cool team that we work with over there. So we set up a permanent location for us, and you know, as long as we keep everything clean and we, you know, keep our noise ordinance down with our generator, which we're always constantly working with, and using the capability of 5 delivery apps has really helped us be able to reach any corners of town, even surrounding towns around Ames we can deliver out to. So it made us more capable than just serving the college students. We can serve everybody. And that we do that all the way from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. right now. But we're going to be readjusting those hours, too, for integrity purposes because there's not a lot of people doing delivery late at night.
Sure.
So just a lot of learning curves and, you know, working with all the stuff you have to deal with.
Let me ask you a little bit about your menu. You have quite a variety, even though yeah. you're highlighting burgers. You've got the wings and a few other things. I noticed you've got a vegetarian option on yeah. a number of your items. Can you describe that sure. a little bit?
It's a Chipotle black bean burger. We do stock that on hand. We get that out just as fast as the regular, you know, beef burger. We have to clean the grill and stuff, of course, first, because you can't have beef residue or anything connected to it because people are vegetarian for more than one reason. So,
sure.
And then, you know, we have the fries, you know, you get regular fries, you know. And we don't have a full extensive menu for vegetarians, but we really tried to have a little bit of something. And I think I have found, you know, a lot of people went that veggie option too because they just really don't do the whole beef burger thing. But right. A lot of people that were buying veggie options from us really like the chicken tender stuff sitting around. So that's really kind of helped to accommodate beef on our menu.
Do you have a what you could call your most popular item or something that seems like a lot of folks crave?
You know, it's funny because I get asked that all the time. I also I proudly do Uber and Lyft here in town. I've been doing it 2.5 years, and a lot of people know me from that as well. And I get asked this stuff often, and I tell them everything that's on that menu, my mind and my hands had touched for the very first time. I created everything on there. And then it was duplicated into process for the rest of the team to do. So everything is my baby. So,
okay. it seems like you got a lot of children there, Guy, because your menu is, you got quite an extensive menu, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's great.
I wanted to be able to cover every simplistic avenue that would be considered just past the idea of bar food, but still appropriate for a family dynamic. And, you know, like, it's not, no question, you know, I just turned 34, you know, and I know many of my friends and that I grew up with, that where's the first place you went to after the bar closed? Everyone always runs to McDonald's, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to slam their product or their process, but I was like, I can do better.
A burger connoisseur.
Yeah, I can do better, and I can do it with a little more attention and specific love that, you know, people would want to get.
That's great. Keith Weinfeld, proprietor of the Burgers on the Fly, has joined us today. And Keith, good luck, and we'll have to stop by again soon. I know a number of us here have our shadows have cast upon the front of your little cafeteria there, the mobile mobile home, the mobile camper, and good luck.
2636 Lincoln Way, Ames, Iowa.
2636. Yep. Okay, Lincoln Way. So just kind of on the west edge of campus.
Thank you, Keith.
Yep.
Tuesday for a hamburger today.
I love to go wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back.
This past Sunday, we were joined by 46 other individuals to experience what has become an important annual event that Ames participates in, Ames Reads Leopold. And that was a gathering at the Memorial Rocks at the Ada Hayden Heritage Park.
Oh, it's the gem of the Ames Park system. I'm convinced that you can go there practically 24/7, and someone is utilizing the wonderful facilities and hiking trail and fishing and kayaking and sailing. And my goodness, what an enriching experience it is to go out to Ada Hayden.
And we want to welcome Wolf Osterreich. He's joining us this morning. How are you, Wolf?
Well, pretty good. Morning to you, Mike and Pat.
Yeah. Are you out and about this morning in the raindrops?
Well, I started out and then headed back, and then I drove to Calhoun, and I'm sitting now at the mini shelter south east corner of the South Lake.
Okay. Well, what have you been seeing this morning, if you've had a chance to take a look?
Well, there's not a whole lot, but there's some northern shovelers. There are two snow geese. There's one ringmail gull, of course, lots of mallards. There was a group of red-breasted mergansers, three male and five female, and that's all I can see from here. And there's everything else is away. I didn't bring my scope with me. But, yesterday there was a lot more ducks, and then a few days before that was like maybe one or two, and then a week ago we had like over 100 different. We had over 12 species, over 100 different birds itself.
Oh,
so it changes day to day.
Sure, because we're in the middle of the spring migration right now. You spoke of northern shovelers. Now, that's not a bunch of people out there with big snow shovels. We're talking about a duck, correct?
Correct. Yeah. We don't want those Minnesotans to come down here messing with our snow.
Can you describe for our listeners just a couple general points about the northern shoveler that they might be able to use as a field mark?
Well, they kind of resemble a mallard, but they have a huge bill. And that, they use that bill to filter the organisms in the water. And then they will spin a lot and, as a group. You can just see them going round and around and round, yeah, moving their bills back and forth.
It's kind of stirring up the goodies down below so that everybody can share in the wealth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually floating in the water.
Have you seen great blue herons yet this year out there?
Yes. Yes. 2 days ago, I saw four. So, but right now we see maybe one or two occasionally around here.
Sure, and that's because the.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's they're looking for fish, and of course the frogs are just starting to wake up.
Right, we had our first common loon yesterday.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that, Wolf, because I heard a Southern Iowa report, and I was hoping they'd show up here in a day.
Yeah, it was just the one in breeding plumage, so it was nice. He wasn't, he or she wasn't here when I first went around, but my second lap around, all of a sudden there he was.
Now, for folks that don't know this, the common loon this time of year in their breeding plumage is black and white for the most part. And then in the fall, they start to lose that breeding plumage and begin to turn towards more of their gray-brown coloration. So that's great that you saw one today.
Yeah, well, yesterday.
Or yesterday, okay. Yeah. Anything else? I know when we were out for the Ada Hayden Ames Reed's Leopold on Sunday, it was pretty windy, but if you got into an area where the wind wasn't so great, there were little hatches of insects starting to appear. I would assume it's a little early for dragonflies and damselflies.
That's right. Yeah, it's still a little too cold for them. I haven't seen any. But the first eastern phoebe was seen yesterday, which was an insect eater. But I didn't see it. But Steve Densmore, who lives on the north end of the park, he saw it.
Yeah. It sounds like I can hear some Canada geese trying to break up our conversation here.
Yeah, there are two of them just now flying in and landing on the lake.
Oh, that's great. Wolf.
And then we have a pair of great horned owls that have young now. There's at least two chicks in there. They look like they're maybe 4 or 5 days old already.
Yeah. And so the adults are now busy trying to obtain food for those little guys. We had our proprietor Burgers on the Fly, but I would assume they don't prefer burgers.
No.
Wolf, can you share with our listeners what is probably the most unusual or maybe your rarest find? Because you keep pretty meticulous records. What would you say is either something that was surprising to you or unusual that you've seen out there?
In all the years, I've been keeping records for 23 years. I guess a yellow-billed loon, Townsend solitaire, a ruff, Mississippi kite, Say's phoebe. These are all birds that I wouldn't expect to see here.
Sure. Yeah, the yellow-billed loon, could you just briefly describe the difference between that and the common loon that we will see here, at least during the migrations?
Well, it's got the name the yellow bill because it goes a little more yellowish, but it's a little straighter and more sharper looking than on the common loon. And then if you saw them in breeding, they would look completely different, but this one was not in breeding plumage, which was in its winter. So
sure,
it's very easy to overlook, and they're very similar looking. The head shape's a little different, too.
Yeah. And I guess, you're talking about field marks or things to look for. Can you give our listeners just maybe a tip or two on how to go about viewing, or are there some specific areas you would suggest for those folks that want to see something or are just beginning to get out there and observe?
Well, the South Lake, especially during migration in winter, is the only place where you're going to find waterfowl other than in the wetlands, but the wetlands are a lot harder to get to, and you don't see things as clearly. But yeah, with the binoculars, you could see things on the water. You know, migrants are starting to come through. The main thing is, you look at a bird, you try to figure out, you know, what type is it? Don't worry about exact species yet. Like, you're looking at a duck, or you're looking at a coot, or you're looking at a loon, or looking at like a sparrow. So you can at least narrow down to what you're looking at through your binoculars.
Mm-hmm. I know that for the beginning birder, we like to compare bird sizes, and so we have a couple of standard sizes like the robin and the crow and such. So, and of course, we have our local Audubon chapter that folks are more than welcome to gather and go out with somebody who has a little experience. And I think most people, once they're out there, they get the bug, they get bit, and the interest and the once they start seeing the variety is amazing.
Oh yeah, when I tell them I've got 279 species for the park, they go, "What?
Yeah,
this whole place?"
That's great. One other thing I was going to mention to you to find out if you've seen or heard, on Sunday, we actually flushed, one of our folks flushed a woodcock towards the north end of the short loop, just before we got to the crossing where you go to the bridge.
Right. Yeah, that's a good spot. A lot of people have been hearing them doing the little displays right before dawn.
Yeah, okay. Pat,
so they're here.
Can you consider this an early spring wolf? I'm anxious to hear of any reports of purple martins. I think usually come return this week.
Yeah, I've not seen any yet, but I've heard reports of somebody seeing tree swallows.
Oh, tree swallows! Absolutely. Yeah, another cavity nesting songbird. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, sure. Those nesting boxes you see below the north slope; those are all set up for tree swallows. Uh-huh. And not the eastern bluebirds, because they're too close. You know, eastern bluebirds like a little more space between them.
Yeah, really good point. Well, it's really wonderful that you share your sightings. Gosh, going on 23 years, that's wonderful. Thank you, Wolf.
Uh-huh. And you can always see my monthly report on the big on the Friends of Ada Hayden website.
And who should or how can members go about, or members of our listening audience go about joining the Friends of Ada Hayden? I know we always like more friends.
Right. You can go on the website. You can Google Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park and click on Reflections, and that takes you to the blog site. And then there's a tab where you can click on and then get information on how to join. Or there's also a Facebook version of it. You can do that.
Well,
or if you see me out here in the park, I can give you a brochure.
That sounds great. And how do we recognize you, Wolf?
Well, I'm on a trike holding a trailer, so I have all my optics in the trailer. So I don't have to carry it on my back or anything. And I'm out here every morning, depending on weather.
Sure. Watch for the man in yellow.
Although I'm not in yellow today.
I'm gonna give you a kind of a loaded question here, because I know we all get asked this, and I know what your answer is going to be. But Wolf, what's your favorite bird?
Oh God!
It's the one you're looking at the time, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah, I'm a little partial towards to the COVIDs and puffins.
Okay, and COVIDs, explain that's a family group for our listeners that may not know that term. It includes a couple of species, especially around here.
Right, those are the crows and jays, because they're pretty intelligent. And they're down in South Texas, they have the green jay, and I think that's just a gorgeous, gorgeous bird.
Yeah, and if you go a little further north, where I like to follow the loons, you've got the common raven, which is an amazing bird, too. So, Wolf, have you got anything to share with our listeners before we let you get back to the count?
Sure. This winter, I collected three dead trumpeter swans, and it seems like all of them had severe lead toxicosis, which is, lead poisoning.
Sure. And probably as a result of picking up from a carcass out in the field, no doubt.
Not a carcass. When they're feeding out in the wetlands or out in the fields, lead shot, lead weight. It doesn't take many of those to cause lead poisoning.
Sure. Well, I know, there is still residual lead from past, but at least for waterfowl hunters and more and more upland hunters, they're starting to switch over to non-toxic. I realize that. But, of course, we still have a lot of sinkers out there. And I was thinking of the lead that might be remains with a deer hunt, for example.
Okay, well, the trumpeter swans wouldn't be eating meat anyway.
Right.
They're eating grain out in the fields.
Yeah, so and their necks are long enough, they're probably getting down into the mud and picking up that residual from the past.
Yeah, right, in the wetlands, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to probably have this for years and years to come still.
Okay, Wolf Oesterreich, our bird expertise out at Ada Hayden. We'll let you continue your count and dodge the raindrops.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf.
Bye-bye.
And our little drink your tea bird is welcoming Susan Guiazda, the communications officer for the city of Ames. And gosh, you look refreshed after your break.
It's good to be back. It was a nice time to be away, but it's great to be back in Ames. And it seems like the weather took a turn while I was gone, and it seems a little bit warmer and very much more spring-like today than it has.
Well, it will turn again because one good turn deserves another, as we like to say in the bird world. So,
March is one of those transitional months, and I think that's why across the country that this week has been designated as National Severe Weather Week.
Yeah.
And it did give us an opportunity to just bring on Commander Jason Tuttle and talk a little bit about our outdoor warning siren systems, talk a little bit about them, what they mean and when they go off, but also some other sort of spring safety tips. And I know that Commander Tuttle has a lot of those as well. So I will just let him share his information.
Yeah, and I had him on here, and all of a sudden he disappeared. So he needs to try to...
I think he's back.
Commander Tuttle, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you. There we go. And I can actually see you now, too. So looks good, like you're good. Undercover.
I am. I dropped off my kids at middle school, so I have to do the interview in the parking lot. So hopefully it goes well.
Okay. Oh, I think we'll be able to do this. Susan alluded to this week as the Severe Weather Week, Severe Weather Awareness Week. What should our listeners be made aware of?
Well, we're entering the spring season. They can obviously bring us severe weather, from severe thunderstorms to tornadoes to, we had a derecho last year. So all types of weather we're going to be approaching here with the spring. And so it's a great time for us to remind the community that we have some, warning sirens in place around town. We have some other mechanisms to communicate to them when severe weather approaches our city. But the first thing I wanted to talk about was our outdoor warning system. And it is simply an outdoor warning system. We have sirens strategically placed around the city of Ames that we can initiate from our dispatch center if we have severe weather approaching. And those sirens are meant for you to hear them when you're outside. Oftentimes we get calls from the community and say, I'm inside my house, I can't hear the siren. Well, the whole point of an outdoor siren is to alert you to go inside to take cover, and then you should turn on news, tune into your phone or to a radio station so that you can get more information about the severe weather that's approaching. So if you hear that siren, you should go inside and take cover. And there are three occasions that we will initiate that siren system. One is for a tornado that's approaching. Second is for winds greater than 70 miles per hour. And then third would be for golf ball size hail. All those things obviously can be a life-threatening issue for our community, for the people that live here. A good example is the derecho last year. The National Weather Service alerted us that there were winds greater than 70 miles an hour approaching the city. So we initiated the sirens that alerted people then to go inside and tune into their local emergency alert station, which could be by radio or TV, like I mentioned earlier. So it's a great time to think about what you need to do in those situations. Have a safety plan at home. Make sure you have a place you can go if there is a if there is this high wind warning or a tornado. Could be the basement. It could be a fortified structure if you're in a ranch style house without a basement. You know, some of those things.
Or as close to the interior and away from windows as you can, because the more walls you can put between you and the hazard, that the better.
Correct. Yeah, a bathroom is oftentimes a good place for that. So identify those locations now before the weather hits. As you may know, if you live in the city, the first Wednesday of every month at 10 a.m., we test those outdoor warning sirens. So you should hear that. We also test those during severe weather week, which will be upcoming here soon. And so it's just a good reminder to start thinking about some of the things that could put all of us in danger and have a plan. The one thing I would say with that is, though, please do not call 911 and ask us why we are sounding the alarms. That happens every time that we do this. Our dispatchers are oftentimes overwhelmed. Susan may have the number. I can't remember. I think we received upwards of 2,000 phone calls the day of the derecho through our 911 center. We cannot answer your question of why we're sounding those alarms if that happens. It means you need to take cover and seek other alternatives. We do have some local radio stations, 1430, 105.1, Channel 5, Channel 8. Those are emergency alert stations. Most of our local news organizations out of Des Moines will broadcast that information from the National Weather Service. There are also weather apps that you can put on your phone that will give you that same information almost the same time that we get it from the National Weather Service. So those are all things that you can do to prepare for this type of weather that's going to be upcoming.
And a lot of us have our phones set for those alerts, or if you don't have that capability, you can get a weather radio, which will do the same thing.
Sure. That's another great option.
Yeah. I live just 2 miles outside of the Ames city limits, and I can often hear, depending a little bit on which direction the wind is, but I can often hear those outdoor sirens. So I know, hopefully it's just a test, but I do take particular alert at the time to just assess what's going on outside before I continue or head for shelter.
Right. You know, the other thing to note is we actually don't give an all clear either, because that's really fact-dependent. It could be one side of town may be okay, the other side of town may not. So that's, again, where you need to tune into those emergency alert stations so that they can provide you more information. Susan and I both run social media accounts for the city. We will likely, in a situation like that, try to get some information out, but oftentimes we are also right in the middle of that emergency. So, but that is part of our jobs, is to alert the community of really what's going on after that that storm hits the city as well.
Something maybe to inform our listeners, when you speak of which numbers and where to monitor, this is right now a good time to maybe go to the Ames City website to pick up those numbers and areas to check while things are not happening, so you have them posted by your phone or on your refrigerator?
For sure, yes. There are a lot of good resources out there. Our City of Ames website, our Facebook account, our Twitter accounts for the city. You know, the National Weather Service has great information. If you're a student on campus, the university police also have social media accounts that they use and will also post that information to those areas. So I think you're exactly right. Do some homework on the front side, so hopefully when that emergency happens, we're not always all thinking clearly when we're in the middle of those emergencies. So whatever we can do on the front side will help us hopefully be safe when that happens.
And, you know, that's true for an individual, but just, gosh, if you've got family members with you, you're not only thinking what you're going to do, but you got to consider what their training is as well.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. You've got another point. As the weather starts to improve, you've got a few things that our listeners need to consider.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're seeing it already probably if you've been around town. As the weather gets nicer, there are more pedestrians out. There are more bicyclists out. Motorcycles are starting to come out of the garages. So, you know, all those modes of transportation are not always easy to see when you're out there driving. So first and foremost, please limit your distractions when you're driving. Put down your phone, turn down the radio. We want you to be able to see and hear those who are around you who may be using the sidewalks, the roadways, that may not be as visible as vehicles. Especially with if you're driving in campus town, the students are oftentimes going across some of the streets in that area. But we have more and more kids now that are riding bikes too. So we want them to be safe. We want you to be safe. But as we often see, distracted driving causes a lot of the accidents that we see here, especially as the weather gets nicer.
I know you probably have some incidences where you get into a school zone and things like that. Those are well marked, but we need to be cognizant no matter where we are of what's going on around you. And folks need to remember that the human body isn't as able to take collisions as that metal container that you're driving in.
No, for sure. We're unfortunately the pedestrians and bicyclists, we're going to lose in that situation because the vehicles have so much momentum and velocity. And so the last thing we want to do is to have to go to someone's house and tell them that their loved one was seriously injured or killed in a car accident. So as drivers, we can do our part. As pedestrians, we need to make sure that we're also being aware of our surroundings. Take out your earbuds when you're crossing intersections or when you're riding a bike, because you need to hear the vehicles and some of those others around you as well.
Okay.
Commander Tuttle, this is Pat Schlarbaum. I'm seeing more and more of the bike trails or lane. How is that progressing? Is it still in some sort of learning curve, or will we be seeing more of those bike lanes?
Yeah, I think we're getting more accustomed to those around town. At times we've had some frictions between drivers and bicycles when the drivers don't fully understand why we created some of those areas for bicyclists. But I think as our community grows and we continue to be more accustomed to having bikes on those bike lanes, I think people will continue to use those more. But I think as a city, we're Susan can probably speak this better than I can. I think we're continuing to evaluate those for safety and how much they're being used by the public.
Very good. Commander Tuttle, do you have any last words for our listeners?
Well, as always, everybody, we want you to be safe out there. Wear your seatbelt. Limit your distractions. Be ready for severe weather as we approach the season, and hopefully everybody has a great week.
Thank you for all the service you and your officers, your colleagues provide for us. You're an integral part of our community as far as I'm concerned, and definitely are very helpful. So thanks again for sharing some of your time.
Thank you.
Susan, do you have any last words?
Just a reminder that today is City Council night. It's the last City Council meeting of March. Again, that will be via Zoom. It starts with an AAMPO meeting, which is the Ames Area Metropolitan planning organization, which does things like long-range planning and identifying street construction and multimodal transportation, all the things we've talked about. So you can tune into that at 6 p.m. More information is on our website.
Thank you, Susan Gwiazda, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Day, he's a day, oh.
And now we want to welcome Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, with her heart-to-heart messages for Tuesday.
Thank you, Mike. Yep, it's Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI when Tuesday. So this heart-to-heart message is a poem about a road trip, and the poem is by Jody Wright. Oh, how I'd like to travel somewhere new, somewhere old, somewhere where the people sing merrily, dance happily. Oh, how I'd like to travel on a plane, on a boat, on something that will get me there fast like a soaring bird, safely like a locked room. Oh, how I'd like to travel to see the sunset of a new horizon, to smell the sweet smells of newness, like the delicious croissants of France, like the finest chocolates of Belgium, like the mouth-watering tomatoes of Spain, to taste each one would fall a delicacy unknown to my taste buds. Oh, how I'd like to travel. Could be anywhere. It doesn't have to be far, because like every crack, it can be long route or it can be short route. So why a poem about a road trip exploring new places and flavors? Well, the host of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show will be taking a road trip to Story City to meet the nice folks that are raising shrimp. Midland Seafood Company is a new kind of agriculture, a new kind of livestock for central Iowa. Interesting. So also, Donna and Lana will turn to thoughts of spring. Ah, spring. Wild geese migrating and a maple syrup tune as well. Who doesn't love maple syrup? So what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? Well, Donna Lana Kitchen talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and farmer Lana explore the local food scene with a lively discussion and good humor on Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. So, Mike Metz, if we travel to 89.1 FM on the dial or visit www.khoifm.org, this afternoon, what will we find on Science Bites?
Well, Ms. Anna Banana, what we're going to listen to is the conclusion of the Citizens Action Plan for Ames. And we're going to be visiting about the Resource Recovery Center and how citizens can reduce, recycle, and reuse items. The recording, it's a little hard to hear at times, but it was sort of an on-the-scene interview in part. But I think it'll be interesting. People will just have to listen close.
And what time do they listen in?
And they will listen, they will start at 4:30 and will conclude at 5 to Science Bites. Sam Wormley and Mary Richards are co-hosts in this program.
Very nice. Well, I just have to go back to the Donna Lana poem. I mean, could I not found a more perfect poem for what they're going to be doing, a road trip to Story City?
Is the title Surf and Turf?
Well, that would have been better. I don't even know what the title is, but that was a great one. All right, so let's get back to this. If you tune in tonight at 8:30 p.m., you get to spend time with me for the Heart to Heart Messages show. I select songs to match the guest messages and our Heart to Heart conversation. Members of Vagrant Fear Productions will join me to share their readings and thoughts about the subject of fear. We will share how we interact with fear and what beliefs and behaviors we adopt as a result of a perceived or actual threat to our way of life. So guess what? Our very own Josh Oren, a volunteer at KHOI, will be part of the program. So I'm very excited about that. And how would you like a sneak peek to one of the songs selected to match to the subject? Oh, I know you do. So for all of you who take on things that scare and delight you, I dedicate these lyrics to you. Scary but fun, crazy but so much fun. Let me do that again. All right, here are the lyrics. Scary but fun, crazy but so much fun. Scary but fun, take a chance in life, you have won one. I'm a little bit scary, but I'm fun. Just a little scary, but so much fun. Yeah, that's right. So, Mike Metz, can you guess that song and artist?
You know, I can't, but I know for a fact that it is not Love is a Many Splendored Thing. That's not a scary song.
That is not a scary song. It depends on who's playing it and what the dedication is, I suppose, though. But you can find out who this was, this amazing artist, by tuning in to KHOI tonight at 8:30 p.m. Now, let's jump forward for a second and get a sneak preview to what is ahead this Thursday, because what is this Thursday? Mike Murphy's What's Going On With You Name It.
Well, it's the Vernal Eternal. It's springtime once again, all part of the cycle of life, and we will be celebrating spring, this great eternal return to the vernal.
Ooh, I like it. And I like it, your music choices. I like the theme, and I like returning to spring because I am over winter, that is for sure. Now, speaking of music, you can check out All Things Piano today at 9 a.m. Tom Russell will feature music by Scriabin and Chopin. Starting with Scriabin's early work, beautiful 24 preludes, and moving to his mysterious later synesthetic mood setter. Say that five times fast. So we have a little bit of time. You know, again, tonight's show is all about fear. So Mike Metz, what do you fear?
The unknown.
Ooh, yes, that is. Serious. Pat, I don't know if Pat can hear me. What do you fear?
Fear itself.
Fear itself, he said.
Oh, that's a good one. And Mike Murphy, what scares you?
Pat took mine.
He's afraid of Pat.
He's afraid of Pat. Well, I tell you, there's lots of things to be scared about, but I'm excited about this show because Vagrant Fear